Yes. There you go.
Hi.
All right.
Is this better?
Yeah, it's a lot better.
Okay.
All right, Madison, let's get started. Ready?
Yeah, I'm ready.
1, 2, 3. I don't know if I'm ready, but I'll try. How is the current situation in Pocatello right now?
Things are getting a little scarier over here. For the first few months of the pandemic, when things were becoming really real for a lot of other states and countries, Idaho was really kind of left unscathed. But now we're getting more cases, and it's really hitting us for the first time over here. But people are still they're really resilient, and we're kind of creating our own normal here in Pocatello.
I want to recall our time working together at the Bengal, you know. I miss that moment when, you know, a lot of editors would gather together and do a lot of editing stuff at the Bengal. So how do you recall yourself working at the Bengal locally from Pocatello and working remotely from you when you went to Europe?
Right. I loved working at the Bengal. Worked for 3 years, all my 3 years at Idaho State as a student. And when I was there in person, it was definitely really collaborative. I loved meeting each week with all the editors and staff writers, and we would just get to go over all of our stories, our layout, and kind of talk strategy, and it was really, really fulfilling. I felt like we had a good community there.
Yep.
And then when I worked remotely while I did a study abroad semester in Sweden, I did feel like I was a part of that community still, but working remotely can be hard. And with time zone differences, that really changes things too. So I didn't tune in to all the meetings. I tried to come to the important ones when I could. And we weren't always working together at the same time, but we still kept in touch a lot. And I was still really grateful to have that team back in Pocatello at the Bengal.
Yeah, I know. The Bengal newspaper has helped me a lot, even myself. I have learned so many things by working at the Bengal. So for you, like, how school newspaper helped you become an effective writer and analytical thinker? You know, I know I still look back to your writings and I still try to learn a lot of things from your writing. You are an excellent writer. So for you, how that particular newspaper department has helped you become successful?
Well, thank you so much, first of all. That's so kind of you. But actually having experience doing the thing that you want to do means so much. You can read the newspaper and take note of the strategies that they use in their writing, but you really don't improve substantially, I think, until you start doing it yourself. So if you want to be a journalist or you want to be any sort of writer, just jumping in your first year of college and writing multiple stories every week, different kinds of stories, will give you so much more growth. And then also just expanding contacts, kind of your network of people that you know and you can talk to, and developing interview skills, the kind of questions that you should ask someone to get a good story. Those are skills that you learn on the job, as well as editing skills too, and just how to write really effectively without needing a proofreader. You pick up those skills so fast because you're writing 2 to 3 stories per week and you just hit the ground running. It's really, really valuable experience.
The reason I invited you in this podcast is, like, a lot of listeners is from Nepal. Like, they're willing to learn skill sets that you have. And I'm very impressed the way you work at the Bengal and being together at the same class. Let's talk about your experience being in Europe. What did you learn different from your study abroad that you could have missed at Idaho State along, like, itself, you know, like Karlstadt University, right?
Yeah.
So what did you learn different?
So many things, and I'm sure you can relate, but going to another country and just living there and being totally immersed in that country and that culture and that language really opens your eyes to a lot of things. You can read a lot about other places and watch videos and talk to people from those places, but it's really hard to really understand just how different people are in other places, but also how similar they are. And I learned kind of how those differences, how I can learn things from the different things that different people do. I can kind of take those lessons back to the US. For example, I love Swedish kind of relaxation culture. They really prioritize taking a break. And I've taken that back to the US, and I think it's a really healthy habit. So you can kind of learn from those differences. But I think maybe the most valuable thing is just really emphasizing yourself, how similar we all are and how we can kind of work together to solve problems, and just also learn to value other cultures and other forms of government, and just take that and apply it to your life back in your home country if that's where you go back to.
Did you miss home or not while being there?
I did and I didn't. I wasn't there that long. And there were certain things I missed. I missed food sometimes, but I was really busy eating lots of great food, so I didn't eat miss that much. I occasionally miss my friends and family, but for the most part, I was just really having a good time there and living in the moment.
I know you were involved in different kind of research projects that's more related about politics, gender, and sexuality, and social media. So what made you interested in doing research in these topics, and what did you learn from doing this?
From the moment I really got involved with the internet and started kind of exploring new topics that I didn't learn in school, I was just immediately drawn to topics about gender and women's political representation. That just clicked with me. I was kind of raised in an environment where women were discouraged from participating in politics and even sometimes from going and having their own careers. And I didn't like that because I've always been very ambitious and career driven. And so when I learned about these topics and in gender and women in politics, I just really, really clung to that and was really interested by it. And then when I got to college, I started actually formally researching these topics, and I was drawn to research on the sexism and harassment that women experience online when they run for office. And that was just a combination of all my interests. I love social media. Sometimes I hate it, but I find it really interesting. And I really am interested in women in politics. I'm really interested in how people run campaigns. So those kind of combined all those interests. And what I learned is that very basically, social media has created an environment that can sometimes be really hostile to mm-hmm. women running for office and all people running for office. People have to deal with new things in their campaigns, and particularly women, but also people of color, people with disabilities, LGBTQ people, they have to deal with different obstacles on social media than other people. And so it's really, really important for everyone, but especially for those types of people to come up with a good social media strategy so that they can combat harassment online and they can run an effective campaign that is not detracted by kind of online trolls and harassers.
Yeah. As a journalist, not everybody would love to involve in research project. Maybe some profession, it could be just as a presenter, some profession could be just reporting. But why do you think it is important to speak up as a journalism scholar?
Yeah, I'm glad you asked that, because I am not super involved in the journalism world anymore. Even though I have that training, I'm super grateful for it. And that really is because the majority of journalists are not really able to speak out about their beliefs and not, they're pretty discouraged from being politically active. And while I love journalism, I also love activism. And when I started kind of combining the skills that I had learned in journalism with my kind of activist heart, it felt really important for me to pursue the things that I really believed in.
Yeah, but has it been really supportive, or how would your colleague react to your mission, especially if he's a male? And how should we all take this as a human being?
People are mostly supportive. I think people who are not supportive of gender research will kind of just roll their eyes, and I haven't really gotten very many negative comments. So that's good. People tend to keep their negative opinions to themselves. More often I get people who are just really, really enthusiastic about my research and what I've learned from it. Because I think most people who are on social media have seen the same patterns themselves. Even if they haven't run for office, they probably have encountered some harassment, some nasty comments, and having a researcher validate their experiences and say, yeah, that's a really common experience and it's one that we need to work together to fix, that is really, I think it can be empowering for people. I agree that there is responsibility on everyone's part, specifically for journalists. I think that journalists have a responsibility to think about gender in their work. For example, a journalist I know really well has been writing stories in the newspaper and realized that a lot of their sources that they quoted were men. And that wasn't on purpose. It was just kind of the people who seemed to have expertise and the people who responded to their emails. And they actually asked me how they could better reach out to women who might have that expertise so that their stories can be more balanced. I think that's really important. There's research on sources in journalistic writing, and male journalists tend to quote almost completely male sources. They don't talk to women that much. And women tend to talk to more women, but still it's just not at all equal. And so I think, talk to whoever is most qualified, but you're probably missing a lot of qualified women if you don't actively think about it and seek them out. So journalists, I think, can just be really conscious of the sources that they talk to and the language that they use. And then the average person, number one, can be supportive of women in their lives and women politicians in their area who might be experiencing negative things on social media, because almost everyone you know is probably experiences at one time in their life. And it's not always good for like a candidate to call out sexism on social media, but it might be good for you to. Or if you see, and then just extending out into your general life, not just politics, if you see someone you know engaging in that type of behavior, making nasty comments about a woman's gender, appearance, like demeaning her qualifications because she's a woman, you can call it out and say, hey, that's not cool. I don't think that's true. Yeah. And I think that kindly calling it out is one of the most effective ways of combating it as a normal person. And then, of course, don't engage in that kind of behavior yourself. Instead, engage in the opposite type of behavior that's very actively supportive of women and actively empowering them.
Yeah, we dive into a little bit of research, your research project, and I think it's important. And what made me exciting about your project is like, not only you did a project, but you also brought those projects in, international sector. Like you presented your paper at the European Conference on Politics and Gender in Amsterdam, in Netherlands on July 5, 2019. So, what was the response? Like, how was the response that you received by presenting that research paper?
The Amsterdam conference, that was a bunch of gender researchers, women or people who specifically research women in politics. And they were really excited about the work. It was cool to present in that setting because I got to talk a little more in depth than I usually get to talk. I got to talk more about the methods of doing this kind of research and how social media platforms are preventing researchers from performing research on their platforms. They've really closed it down a lot, so there's not as much transparency on those platforms. And it's harder and harder for researchers to perform their research about Facebook and Twitter. And so we got to have a really productive conversation about how we can work with social media platforms to do research about what happens on their platforms.
A lot of things that we can learn from you about research itself. And I think all the viewers who are watching us or all the listeners who are listening to us in this podcast can get a lot of idea from you about your research, you know, research ideas, and we can take a lot of inspiration from you. Anyone who wants to do research in the area of their interest, how can they get started? Like, is there any tips or helpful ideas that you want to share with us?
I think research often happens in an academic context. So if you're getting a degree at a university, that's definitely the easiest way to get involved. And if you are a student, the best advice I can give you is to find someone at your institution, or maybe at another institution, who does research similar to what you want to do. It doesn't have to be exactly the same, but maybe the same subfield. And then reach out to them. You might not always have perfect luck on the first try. Some fields are more supportive than others. And in my field, all the people I've ever reached out to for help have been so excited to help me and mentor me. But that is my biggest piece of advice, is just try and find a mentor, whether it's, you know, just emailing a professor that does work similar to yours at your institution, taking a class from them, developing a relationship with them, and then asking them to help you get involved with research opportunities, or also becoming involved with research programs at your university, including internships. There's lots of resources for people who want to get involved in research at their institution. And then if you aren't at an academic institution, you can still get involved in research. My first tip would be to just start engaging with the existing body of work in the field that you're interested in, and just read up all you can about it, and then see if you can find a question that hasn't been answered that, and then you can start tackling that.
I think we covered a lot of things about research, and it might be boring for our audience, listeners. Research is kind of thing that not everybody can do, and if somebody does it, then I think it's worth it. And what other thing that you would be interested in working or doing as a multifaceted scholar?
I am really interested in social media and new media. In my current position, I do marketing and promotions, and so I'm on every social media platform. I'm on all sorts of websites, creating all sorts of content. And I love that. I love creating content that serves the audience I'm trying to talk to, and works towards a goal.
Yeah.
So I would really love to get more involved in social media and running kind of social media campaigns. I would really love to do public interest work and activism on social media.
You worked with several organizations before working for Idaho State University as a marketing and recruitment director. How has working on those organizations helped you become successful in your current position?
We've kind of talked about getting experience in the field that you want to go into, right?
Yeah.
And that is the number one thing that has helped me in my position. And the number one thing that will help what I'm doing in this position translate into my next position is, in college and also in your career, just working hands-on on projects and developing lots of different skills, I think, is the best thing that you can do for your job prospects. I have learned how to write basically any kind of story that I need to write. I've learned how to write and edit podcasts and movie scripts, and I have filmed many videos. I just started getting into TikToks. I can design content. I can I can schedule content for social media. I can write newsletters. I can, and that makes me very indispensable at my job, because I can do all the stuff that you need to do, and I can do things that other people can't do. So that's probably my biggest piece of advice. I give that advice to all the students that I talk to, is just get hands-on in the field that you want to go into, learn the skills, and just get really good at a lot of stuff, and you will get a job.
Yeah. So how are you planning to continue the journey of journey in journalism career? What's your plan?
The great thing about journalism is that it's so relevant to so many things, and it doesn't matter what exact position I'll have in the future. I can still have a really strong relationship with journalism. In my current position, I send press releases to the newspaper all the time. I'm always working with local media, and I use my skills as a former journalist, I guess, to write stories and create content that people really find engaging. And then I imagine in my future roles, I will work again with local media, I will write stories, and I will share other journalists' work, because that will always be important to me. I think, even if you don't end up having a career in journalism, you can still be very much involved in journalism.
It was really a fun conversation with you, Madison, after a long gap, you know. We're in the same classrooms, we're in the same place to work while working at the Bengal newspaper, and now remotely at these situations. I feel so great to have you on my podcast. At last, what's your message? Or is there anything else that you'd like to share to all the people who are watching us all around the world, especially my audience and my viewers are from Nepal? What's your message?
I just love what you're doing. I find it really cool that we're connected on Zoom right now, and we're connecting with an audience that is also very far away from us. It's just really fitting for this moment when so many of us have to be working remotely. We're not really connecting in person as much, but having these moments of connection remotely, it's so cool. And I love that you're providing this connection for so many people.
Thank you so much for your valuable time, Madison.
Thank you.